So, Richard, what was that process of losing that weight? What did you do differently from when you were playing football? Like, kind of how did you get there? Because I try to lose 15 pounds and it's freaking
You eat
hard.
Twinkies. That's because you eat Twinkies.
Welcome to Just the Tip Tuesday, Got Game University's new short form podcast. I'm Mike Edgehouse, and with co-host Ryan Smith, we take 10 to 15 minutes to dive into a subject that will make you a better hunter. Remember, it's just the tip that counts.
On this week's podcast, we were able to speak with Richard Betancourt, co-founder of Steep Country Outdoors. We talked about fitness and his journey from Division I football player to a Steep Country athlete that owns the mountain. We hope you enjoy it.
This is the Got Game University podcast, fitness series, episode 2. Mike and I are here with Richard from Steep Country. How you doing, Richard?
Hey guys, I'm doing well. Happy Saturday. It's a beautiful day. I don't know about where you guys are at, but I'm happy to be here, and thanks for having me on. I can't wait for the convo.
You got it, awesome. Brother. We're excited to have this conversation. So, Richard Betancourt from Steep Country Outdoors. I was just watching your Chasing September or whatever, the one you posted about a month ago about you and your dad. So you got a pretty freaking awesome thing going, and truly, I mean, I don't use the word radical lightly, pretty radical journey from like your college days to afterwards to getting into the industry to, you know, the partnerships that you formed with other companies. And now you're, dare I say, like, pretty damn fit in the mountains and posting that stuff with your new Cam Haynes shoes and everything else. Like, I can't wait to dive into your journey, brother. Like, I'm actually stoked. I've done a little bit of background research on you, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, this guy's like the full meal deal. You're supersizing the value meal here, having you on. So we're pretty fortunate to get you on here. So why don't we start with the typical like interview question? If you had to describe yourself in 10 words, how would you do that? No, I'm totally dicking with you. Like, don't do that. But like, give us the 30,000 foot view of yourself. Like, what do we know? What do you want people to know about you, man?
Yeah. Tell us your story.
Fair enough. All right. Well, it's a little journey, kind of like Mike was hinting at there. But yeah. First off, I hope you liked the newest elk film. It is called September Whispers, actually.
Yep. Okay.
And that, if that gives anybody out there listening just kind of a preview of how the season went, maybe they can really relate to that or not. I don't know. But it's how it was for us. And I'm really proud of that film, actually. I think it's one of our better films that we've released to date. So
nice.
Been very excited about watching that grow and watch people enjoy that. But as far as myself, my journey in what we're calling the industry. Are we saying the industry? Did you say I was in the industry? Did I make it?
You're in the industry more than we're in the industry. So like, we have an industry professional on here today. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But I want to hear the background. I want to hear from like high school to like knocking people's heads in college, like in the whole shebang. Like, when did this whole passion ordeal start for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like I said, it's been one heck of a journey. And, my previous life, as I like to call it, I was, an athlete, a football athlete. And for those around the Treasure Valley here in Idaho and like to the Boise area, they may remember me. They may not. It doesn't really matter. It's nothing that I'm, looking for ever. But yeah, I played high school football here in Meridian High School. In Meridian, Idaho, and that was back, it's 10 years ago at this point, which is kind of crazy, but that was kind of back when Idaho really wasn't on the map as far as recruiting for Division I football athletes, and the class that I was in was a very special class, I thought, because we had, I'd say, 5 to 8 of us who ended up going to a Division One school and, like, you know, recognizable schools, whether they're in the Pac-12 or the Mountain West or somewhere along those lines. So it was really special to be a part of that class, and I'm thankful for that. But I graduated high school early, actually, to get out to the University of Wyoming is where I committed to. So I graduated in December of 2013 and went to the University of Wyoming, and that's where I got my four-year degree at in business management and finance, actually. So I tried to get a meaningful degree when it came to college, because as much as my head was wrapped around the whole football game and as much as I loved football and everything like that, I was real with myself as far as, like, okay, it was a slim chance to get to a collegiate level, especially the Division I level, and it's even a slimmer chance to go beyond that into the, like, the league. And then honestly, my college, you said I was smashing heads in college, and I like to think that a little bit too, but that's just my own pride. But honestly, my collegiate career, I would say, was very enduring. I mean, mm-hmm. I've talked about it before, but it's something that it was the first time in my life where I was taken out of an environment that I grew up in and was so comfortable in, and then was faced with real challenges, you know, as far as life, because I love using the parallel of life and the game of football. And even in our most recent film, look at that plug I'm going into. I've been using the parallel of the game of football to the game of archery elk hunting. But anyway, it was the first time I had to endure, like, these challenges of culture changes and coaching changes. And the biggest one for me was actually injury. And I had some pretty serious injuries through my collegiate career. Luckily, I was able to work through most of them and still get some playing time and, you know, do that whole thing. But it was my, you know, junior year I realized the professional route is probably not going to be something that I am able to pursue just because of how it's mm-hmm. gone so far. So I need to start looking beyond football. And then once I finished my junior year, I actually ended up having a shoulder surgery that ended my football career. And it was something that I did not want to happen as far as my career ending, but I knew that it was a possibility once I got the diagnosis, because I played the whole season. And then I went home for break, and then I was having an issue, and I got checked out, and the doctors were like, oh, dude, you need surgery. And then when they did the surgery, they were like, oh, we thought this was going to be a 3-month recovery time. Now we're looking at 12 to 14 months. And I'm like, yeah, man, what are you talking about? I got graduation. I got a senior football season. Like, what are you talking about? You know? So yeah. they tried to speed up my rehab time and everything. And at the 6-month point, that's when we did a check-in on my progress and everything, and I had some real conversations with my coaches and the athletic training staff, and it was determined, you know, like, if you want to have any sort of life beyond football, it might be best for you to be medically disqualified, is what they call that. And when you go that route, I'm very thankful for this, but the university still, like, honors your scholarship, allows you to graduate. And then I was able to stay involved with the team that's my senior year. I worked in our recruiting department, so I was still able to be a part of the team in a way and get to experience the success and everything and be a part of that, you know, have that camaraderie with those guys. Yeah. But I was pretty bummed. So beyond football, that was the first year that I was like, okay, I have some time. I'm going to go back to Idaho and I'm going to go on an elk hunt. My dad, who runs Steep Country with me, his alias is Angry Dick, if you guys don't know. So Angry Dick and I went home for a week to visit and do a elk hunt. And my dad had been having lots of success in the elk woods ever since I was a kid, you know, killed bulls almost every year, just really got to know the area that we elk hunt in. And I went home for a week to do a rifle elk hunt, assuming, we all know what assuming does, but I was assuming that it was going to be a, you know, a home run, and it was going to be easy. And not only had I just endured this crazy, like crazy college football career, but it was my first like kind of smack in the face of the hunting world and the whole phrase, you can't cheat the mountain and everything like that. The elk hunt was 7 days and we only did about 60 miles or so. It was a rifle hunt. So, I mean, we weren't doing like super high mileage days like archery season, but I was still 330 pounds and it just totally kicked my ass. My dad the whole time was like, why are you struggling? You're a Division I athlete. You should be crushing these mountains. And so that was messing with me too, because I was like, I don't know why I'm getting crushed. Like day four or five of the hunt, I was so immobilized by the things we were doing that we'd get on, you know, there was snow and we'd get on fresh elk tracks and it'd be like, oh man, these elk were just here, you know, within this morning. Let's walk down this ridge. And I'd pass up on it. I'd be like, you know, no, I'm good. You know? And like, how demoralizing is that, like, to go back and think about? So, you know, we went through that hunt, and obviously I didn't kill any elk. I mean, I would have had to have just gotten lucky at that point, and my life hasn't gone that way ever to where I'm just getting lucky. I mean, sometimes, but so I didn't earn anything basically. And I went back to Wyoming to finish out the semester empty handed, kind of lost, to be honest, because I was about to graduate. I wasn't sure about the whole hunting thing. And the only thing I could really focus on was, well, at least I'm going to get a degree. So I need to start focusing on, you know, getting a good job and finding a place to settle where I'm going to have good opportunity to grow my career and everything like that. So fast forward beyond that, that elk hunt though started to really bother me. I noticed after I did that, like I noticed that I was constantly thinking about it and how much I was being affected by how much I was bothered by it, because I love the mountains. I've always loved the mountains since I was a kid. From camping to going to our family cabin to being a little kid and going to elk camp with my parents, like something I always loved was the mountains. And to just know, like, they totally kicked my ass, it was like I was a little upset about it. So I came to a realization, like, I don't have a purpose anymore and I need to refine my purpose, you know, outside of work. Because I don't want to become somebody who's identified by their corporate job or whatever it may be, you know. I want to be able to have a good work-life balance. I want to be able to have a family someday to where they feel like, you know, I was present and am able to spend the time with them that is needed. So I had to repurpose myself, and that elk hunt was kind of like a thorn in my side. And I said, you know what, like, it's going to take me becoming an athlete to go into the mountains, and that's what I got to do. And I'm an athlete right now for Division I football, but this isn't the same. This is a totally different game, and this is a game of endurance and strength. I've just been playing a game of, like, just pure brute strength, you know? So I got to figure out a way to repurpose my mindset, my body, my nutrition, everything I'm doing. Because I will not step foot on a mountain again until I know that by day 7 or day 5 or whatever it was of that elk hunt, I feel just as good or as fresh physically as I did on day 1. So, because I know the mountains can wear you down mentally, and that's a whole nother battle in itself. But as long as I knew my physical body would be okay once I got into the depths of a hunt, then my mind could play catch up. So
you had to totally repurpose yourself. Like, you had to take a step back from 330 pound, you know, smash mouth Richard to, all right, how am I going to get this 330 pounds to a weight that I can be physically adapted or be able to physically handle the mountains? So that probably meant losing a handful of LBs and changing from, I mean, you can't change the amount of fast twitch and slow twitch fibers in your body, but you had to kind of let some of those fast twitch fibers, those power muscles, go atrophy, and then really train some of those slow twitch fibers and really reposition yourself to get what you wanted out of the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years of your life then.
Right. Yeah. And you talk about the weight, and that was, you know, that was the biggest like challenge that I was staring at the face, because I just, I mean, the basic answer to things was like, okay, you just need to be lighter to be able to hike a mountain, you know? And I went from 330 pounds down to the lightest I was 243. So I think that's, you know, combined like 80, 87 pounds or something like that. And
87. Yep.
Yeah. Wow. So I just, wow, my math is good. Can you believe it? Idaho education.
We can count on Ryan for that. He's in school right now. He's the one that's top.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, okay, good. So Richard, what was that process of losing that weight? What did you do differently from when you were playing football? Like, kind of how did you get there? Because I try to lose 15 pounds and it's freaking hard.
Right. Right. So,
that's good. You eat Twinkies.
I love
donuts. Are good, man. Okay.
Yeah, especially during bear season. Oh my gosh. So like I said, was saying, like Mike was saying, I just had to repurpose everything. So I had to take everything I knew about nutrition up until this point, and you know, physical fitness, and kind of not throw it out the window, but just say like, this is not how we're going to be applying our new mindset. You know, we have to be a student. We have to have an open mind, and we have to put our ego aside when it comes to being able to bench press over 400 pounds or squat over 500 pounds, and understand that if we load it down to 200 or to 250, we can use that in a way that's going to change our, you know, our physical being to be able to be repurposed for a different task, you know. And something I learned too was it is truly all diet. I mean, your body is a direct impact of the calories that you are putting into your body on a day-to-day basis. So
not just number of calories, but quality of calories too. I brought that up, maybe it was last week with Ryan. I said, like,
yeah, it was.
Even changing your diet from, you know, the egg on an English muffin and fruit in the morning, that English muffin is processed and has, you know, 47 ingredients to it. Take that carb out and replace it with oatmeal. It's freaking amazing. Like, the oatmeal will only last for, like, at least for me, 45 minutes to an hour and a half, where I'm like, oh my God, I need to eat again. But that English muffin or bagel, which has the equivalent carbohydrates, but because your body has to take so long to break that down into the usable forms of, you know, carbohydrates, the glucose and stuff, that'll last me 2.5 hours.
Right. So for me, it was experimenting a lot too with my diet. And I know people feel certain ways about like trend diets or fab diets, but I did utilize one. I used the keto diet for about, I want to say 4 months or so, four-ish months. And I had done a lot of research though going into it, because I had heard the horror stories of people who would lose all this crazy weight, but then they'd put on everything they lost plus some. So, you know, when they got off of it. And so I was really, really careful. And sometimes I'm a person of extremes. So something I had identified in myself, right, was I love carbohydrates. I love chips. I love popcorn. You know, I love all these food sources that our food industry has just totally projected onto us as being good food, but it's just terrible for us. So I was like, you know what? The ketogenic diet is a diet that I'm not going to treat as a diet. I'm going to treat it as a lifestyle change for a while, and I'm going to see where it takes me, and I'm going to be extremely careful and watch myself and be very strict. And then once I get to a point where I feel like I can start to switch my lifestyle back to a more normal diet, then I will. Mm-hmm. So I attribute the ketogenic diet to about 35 or 40 pounds of my weight loss. I did lose a lot of weight really fast on that diet. So it did work for me, but I think it was also a combination of like not only the ketogenic diet, but it was just I was in such a calorie deficit because when I was playing football, I was eating, you know, close to 6,000 calories a day just because of the meal plans we were on. Yeah. Tons of food, always eating, always.
Yeah.
Which I love eating. It's like my second favorite hobby. So
I love it.
But, you know, so I think the caloric deficit really played a key as well. So I restricted myself down to like 2,000 or 2,200 calories a day. And then I was my schedule at the time, I was only working part time. So I would get off work by 1:30, 2 o'clock, go from work straight to the gym, not even have my first legitimate meal until like, you know, 3:30 in the daytime. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, I'd eat basically from 3:30 to 9 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night. And then I really wouldn't have a true meal again. So there was a whole combination of things that went into the mind like shift change and everything like that. And I think the biggest thing that I would tell anybody right now who, you know, like you were saying, Ryan, is struggling just to lose 15 pounds is you have to be really honest with yourself when it comes to what you're doing on a day-to-day basis as far as your diet and your routine. And the little things add up. So, you know, if you're not going to do one of these fad diets or something like that, like you just got to really look at every little thing that you're eating. And I'm not saying you need to be like a crazy macro counter or anything like that, but just be honest, you know, like, okay, did I have two bagels today? Or did I have, you know, when I was eating that, those chips, did I eat more than half the bag? Or the whole bag, exactly. You know, did I drink two beers at dinner? Like, it's stuff right. like that that's going to really add up, and it's going to affect your metabolism and everything to where you're not going to see that progress. And I can 100% attest to what you're saying, Ryan. Like, it's been long enough now since I started this whole fitness journey that I know when I'm super strict, I see tenfold the amount of progress that I want versus when I'm way more loose. Like, I could be training as hard as possible, but if I'm not watching, you know, if I'm cutting corners on stuff like my diet, I'm not going to see progress, or I'm just going to see a plateau. And it can be very frustrating because we already feel like we're doing such a hard thing by doing a new workout regimen, or, you know, working out hard physically in the woods. So we want to cut ourselves a little bit of slack, but it takes that discipline to be able to carry that throughout every aspect of your life and everything that you're doing. So,
you know, it's one of those things. Well, I was just, it's a level of mental fortitude. It really comes down to how freaking bad do you want it? Are you willing to, if you have those two beers at dinner and, you know, you eat the healthy dinner, but then afterwards, like, man, that was a lot of salt. I really need something sweet to combat that salt. Then you have that small bowl of ice cream or that like yogurt sickle or whatever. And then you're like, oh, but now I need something salty, so I eat some potato chips. Like, no one's going to yell at you. No one's going to say, hey, fatty, stop that, except yourself. And if you're willing to accept it, then freaking accept it. Right. But also understand, like you said, Richard, like what you're putting in is what you're going to get out the next day. And it may not be like the next morning if you work out that you'll feel it, but it'll be that workout either in the afternoon the next day or 2 days later. And you'd be like, man, I feel kind of sluggish. I feel this, but you just have to answer to yourself. You know, I don't like that. What's that guy in the mirror saying and stuff like that, but it really holds true. Like, nobody cares. Like, guys my age, nobody cares if you have a dad bod. You care if you have a dad bod, right? You care if you have boobs bigger than your girlfriend or your wife. Like, they probably don't. They're still with you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, so you just have to answer to yourself. And, like, I did the keto diet so I can empathize with what you're saying. So when I was racing Ironmans, I did my goal race was Ironman Lake Placid in 2008. And I started training for that. I was 18% body fat and weighed 215 pounds. I did a DEXA scan and I got a coach and everything else. And, you know, my coach, she was awesome. She was like, listen, I don't care how you look. I don't care how fast or slow you are. It's like what you want. And there's real simple ground rules to the keto diet, right? And, like, we won't go into those. Like, the listener can look them up, but it's just a matter of how bad you want it. And I ended up doing it for like 8 months, and I ended up racing Ironman at like 3% body fat and 188 pounds. And that was the last time, unfortunately, that I had a six pack until this summer, because my smart ass 14-year-old bet me, he's up in Canada playing hockey, and he's a specimen. And I was like, I'm going to have a six pack this summer on the boat. I'm not going to have the dad bod. He's like, come on, you haven't had a six pack in almost 20 years. And I was like, all right, you little effer, like, this is on, like, it's happening now. So, you know, I tightened everything up and went straight. It really is. It's just mental fortitude. And it's not the mental fortitude of, like, how much crap relating it to elk hunting. Am I willing to go 16 miles for this elk and then be willing to do another 60 miles getting this elk out? That's a different type of mental fortitude. It's, am I willing to look at the bagel in the morning and the box that has the guy and the hat on it? And am I willing to choose oatmeal over a bagel with cream cheese on it in the morning? Are you willing to make those tiny, small choices that in the long run will freaking add up to a huge thing for you, right? It's, you know, you hear all the time, consistency with shooting your bow, consistency with your e-scouting, consistency with your trail cams, consistency even in where we choose to hunt, right? Like, I could go hunt, well, all of us being residents in Idaho, we can go hunt anywhere that's not a limited draw tag, right? We just have to choose, but I choose to stay consistent to the area that I hunt because I get to know that area better. I mean, I know damn near every rock in the unit that I hunt, and I know where to look. And it's the same with diet and exercise. And to your point, Richard, I'd probably even say it's more important to have a consistent diet than it is to have the consistent exercise, because diet is absolutely everything. And just so the listener knows, we're using the term diet just to indicate, like, what you're eating. We're not saying, like, a consistent juice cleanse diet or anything like that. Like, just what you consume on a daily basis. Be consistent with your choices.
Right.
You know, so you drop the weight, you did that, you got into hunting. What was the synthesis of Steep Country? Did you and Angry get together and be like, it's time we got to sugar it off the pot, dad? Like, I, first of all, I love that it's you and your pops. And the listener, you should subscribe to his YouTube channel. I'll plug that because it's pretty awesome. Like, they don't just do hunting and, like, you know, videos and, like, gear review, but, like, they add lifts to their pickup trucks and freaking everything on there. Like, they do it all. And they are, like, it's seeing Richard's relationship with his dad, and, like, it's something special. So when did that start for you? Like, what the hell? Were you just like, let's do it?
So, yeah, it's actually a really interesting story as well. And for everyone listening right now, if you go to look it up, it's not Steep Country like you would think it's spelled. Country is actually spelled K-U-N-T-R-Y. We put a little twist there to be different, and that term country with a K is something I've been trying to live since I was little. So I thought it was a good time to put it into a brand, you know. But as far as when it started with my dad and I, Steep Country didn't actually start filming and stuff until the fall of 2018. That's when we first filmed our first elk hunt together. However, the filming of our hunts and everything like that stems back to when I was a kid on home videos. So with the big shoulder cam, VHS recorder, like, my family is one of those families where we just recorded everything. And we always joked about, like, man, you could have a reality TV show of some of the things that happen, you know, from just the day-to-day, whatever, to the Christmas time specials when kids are crying when they don't get what they want or whatever it might be, you know. So, but from an early age, when I would get the chance to go hunt with my dad, whether I was participating or not, or just there to be with him, we would try and film those or have the, you know, the movie recorder with us just to share those, share the journey and share the story and have it in our memory. And actually, we have a video on there that I've never released, and it's sitting in our private called Just Shoot It, because it was the first time I got to go on a deer hunt with my dad, and we went down to Southern Idaho. And the why we called it Just Shoot It is because I'm sitting there filming him, and he's trying to confirm if it's a buck or not. And the sun was weird on its head, so we couldn't really tell, and it was in some brush. So, and I'm just sitting there whispering the whole time, just shoot it, shoot it, shoot it. You know?
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So it's something we have in the archives there that we'll see if it ever makes it out to the public. But yeah, go back to 2018. I had been on this fitness journey essentially since, you know, January of that year. And I was like, you know, this is something that we did growing up, and I'm starting to see that there's a platform that we can actually share this stuff, being YouTube, because the YouTube community I always thought was, you know, for crazy cat videos or viral pranks or anything like that, right?
And it, and so, it kind of was until like 5 or 6 years ago, right?
Yeah, right. And I mean, we can plug the, like, the Hushing guys, but those guys have kind of created this, like, path for all these outdoor enthusiasts, like content creators, to be able to share that stuff. And I started following Hushing, I don't know, probably in 2016 or 2017. That's when I kind of started seeing some of their videos and stuff on YouTube. And it was just some guys hunting, you know, and I always used to think to myself, like, geez, you know, this is something me and my dad have gone through, or that my dad knows about, or that we've talked about, like, why couldn't we ever share this stuff? So it always kind of lingered in the back of my mind, and it gained some it was gaining more popularity, and you started to see more videos specifically from those, the Hushing crew. And I was like, you know what, dad, let's film this elk hunt, not only because it's our first legitimate archery elk hunt that we're both holding tags, but let's film it like, you know, we're going to release it on YouTube. So we didn't go crazy, and we didn't like invest in all these cameras or anything. And we didn't put a ton of pressure on ourselves, but, we were like, we both have cell phones. They record just fine. This is our first archery elk hunt together. Like, it's going to be my first legitimate, like serious elk hunt that I'm going on, you know, minus the elk hunt the previous year with the rifle. But let's capture it and see what happens. And it turned out to be a great season that we faced all these ups and downs and everything that you'll face in an elk season if you're an archery elk hunter. And I was like, okay, well, you know, we both tagged out. I believe, you know, my dad's whole purpose, he talks about in the beginning of that video, is, you know, he's been, his whole purpose of having a son was to have someone to call for him. But he wanted to, you know, he wanted to,
dream.
Right. He wanted to dedicate that year to finding me an elk and a bull that I could shoot. And, you know, it turned out that I was able to shoot a bull that season. And then the last day of season, he was also able to tag out. So it became a very special hunt. And then I had to just figure out, okay, how do I try and put this together in a way that we can share it on a platform where people are going to actually watch it and enjoy it and understand that it's not just, you know, elk hunting alone is not just a bunch of rednecks driving around smoking cigarettes in their blue jeans, like, you know, trying to shoot an elk that comes on the road. So that was something my dad and I had talked about that whole season, like how we can capture that or how we can show that or what name of a brand is going to, you know, people are going to remember and want to talk about. And we had played with a whole bunch of different names that whole season, and he actually had a YouTube. So Steep Country Outdoors was actually my dad's YouTube channel before. Now, he had only had like a couple hundred subscribers, I think. And we would just for fun sometimes film a little video when I would come visit from college or something, or he would film a little video about a gun or something and post it on there. So it wasn't a legitimate platform, but we figured, oh, you got a couple hundred subscribers on there already. Let's, you know, let's just stick on that and see what we can, where we can go from there. So it was born in the fall time of 2018.
And you guys have been just hustling since.
Something like that. I mean, I try not to put a ton of pressure on myself as far as the brand. I mean, I really do love it, and it is a passion of mine, and I'm finding out the depths of my passion as I work on it more and more and as the years come through. And it is kind of weird for me to think about that it's 2024 and I'm still just as fired up about it every single day. I'm thinking about it constantly. You know, I'm on a podcast right now with you guys talking about the brand. Like, it's really cool to think about in retrospect.
I mean, you started in 2016, you said, and you've got over 100 videos on your YouTube channel, I'm pretty sure. And so, I mean, yeah, that's a lot of work in 6 years or whatever. I mean, how many years has it been? 8 years?
Oh, yeah. 2018 to 2024. So this will be our sixth year.
This is your sixth year. I mean, 100 videos is rocking it. I mean, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot, one video is hard.
Right. And what's cool, and I think that is something that our subscribers and the people that go to our channel can see, is the evolution of our videos. And I want that to be a focal point for people to hear, because some people think that, oh, it's too late to start doing this stuff. It's already been done, you know. It's never too late to start. All you got to do is start. And
I'm in my late 40s and just starting this thing. It's never too late to start.
Yeah. So, I mean, and literally, like, if you go back to some of our first videos, it's just purely iPhone. I mean, we were a purely iPhone brand until, I think, 2022 is when we invested into some cameras that are, you know, a little better quality and some better editing softwares that allow us to portray more cinematic films and stuff like that. But, you know, our whole... No. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say and plug the videos on yours, you know, pat you on the back. I like your videos because you just mentioned cinematic quality and stuff. And I'm guessing that means with the camera angles and stuff like that, and like your intro sliding in from the sides and the voiceovers are super clear and stuff. But a lot of people in the industry, and I think Ryan Smith, you'll attest to this, like where they once started like super organic and raw and super freaking fun to watch, right? It seems like things have become a bit more choreographed and a bit less real. I mean, I love iPhone footage videos because like that's real. Like when you're out there and even though you got better quality cameras and stuff like that, like I watch your videos, like the one I was just watching from a month ago, I was like, this is legit. This is real. Like I love it because it's not choreographed. It's not rehearsed. It's not like, oh, let's take that again because I said that wrong that time. Like that's the real part of it. And I truly enjoy it.
Well, yeah, well, the fact that you and the fact that you and your dad are the ones, you know, doing it, definitely, since a lot of companies are going and getting professional videographers, paying people to do this, even makes it that much more special and cool.
Yeah, we started out as a father-son duo running this brand, and we've been very real with each other that my dad's not going to be able to walk in those elk woods with me forever, or in the woods in general. You know, he's going to be, his role is going to change as he gets older, mm-hmm. because, you know, he's almost 60 years old. So the time is dwindling down for him. And, you know, as much as that hurts me, it'll never keep me from creating content through this brand. So we look at this brand as kind of like we want it to be kind of a legacy brand, right? And, you know, just really like showcase the bond between a father and son, and, you know, show that, but then whatever grows into from there, like we always have that foundation of, you know, this was started because of a father and son and the relationship that they had within their family. So whether that motivates people or inspires them to be, you know, however it is they want to be, like, that's really our biggest point. And we have three like pillars that we try and create our content off of to kind of check ourselves and make sure that we're staying raw and real. And, you know, they're on the main screen of our channel, but it's the educate, entertain, and enlighten. And we try and stick with those through every video, because even if we're not educating you guys, you know, we might be entertaining you through just our dialogue. Because, I mean, who's not going to laugh at a guy named Angry, right?
So with a mustache that has to weigh 4.5 pounds.
Right, exactly, right? You know? And like the whole, you know, the whole enlighten, I chose the word enlighten, or we chose the word enlighten, because we wanted to showcase things that, as we saw the industry or, you know, the content that was getting created out there, like, okay, they're starting to do this because, you know, it's becoming more choreographed or whatever. We want to continue to enlighten people to the reality of the, some of the things that it is that we're doing, right? No, none of us, no matter how much money you make or anything, none of us are untouchable, you know? So as much as we can share that and showcase that, that I bleed just like you, and I'm a human just as much as you are, and I'm going to have my struggles through my journey. If we can chat about it, and, you know, I can relate to you or you can relate to me, let's talk about it and let's figure out a way to work through it. Like, that's what we want to showcase to people. And that's really what the brand is here for, to do for folks.
I love it. I love it. Ryan, you're up, buddy, with some questions.
Okay. Well, this is, what was the harder process, you know, you going into the hunting industry, you know, or getting into hunting? Was it the diet and the working out and getting fit so you could keep up with your elderly, you know, your older dad? Or was it the process of starting Steep Country, learning the camera system, getting comfortable with editing? What was harder for you in this process of going into hunting and going into the actual industry?
Yeah, so you're definitely talking about two different paths, right? Like, you don't have to be some crazy like fitness guy to be in the hunting industry, I would say. I mean, you could just be a really smart businessman, and if you have a lot of financial capital to initially invest into, you know, a brand or something, that's going to get you a good, you know, pretty far along, I would say. What you talk about is very interesting, because I had essentially two paths, and I still have two paths that I'm going down every single day. So I'll start with the fitness part. And it's funny you talk about that, because you have me, somebody who's working out every day, trying to work on my diet, do all these things to stay consistent and be able to perform at the highest level that I can. But then you have my dad, who's complete opposite. And it's not that he's, you know, lazy or anything, or that he has all, excuse me, but he has all these bad habits. He's a guy that's not really into like fitness, right? He wants to have purposeful fitness, which means to him, he's out in the woods hunting, right? And that's his exercise. You know, I've been able to get him out a few times to go on hikes or to go do 3D shoots or stuff like that, which, you know, kind of mask the fact that he's hiking and working on, you know, his cardiovascular health, and, you know, makes him feel like he's, you know, shooting his bow or whatever. But, you know, I took him backpacking one year, and he was like, what the hell's the point to this? He's like, there's no point to backpacking back here. Like, it just killed me, and now I'm got to sleep here, and it's uncomfortable, and I can't chase any elk. I guess I'm going to try and fish, you know, but we're a little opposite in those regards. So that's what's also like really interesting, is that we bring that, like, that two of those dynamics into the brand. For me, the whole fitness thing was, I don't want to be someone who is like going into a hunt being like, I'm going to get in shape as I'm on this hunt, because I learned how that works out, and that doesn't work out for me. You know, it leads to me giving into those excuses or making excuses or or not going as hard as I mentally want to, you know, I should never, to me, I never want to physically break before I mentally break. You know, I mean, I know I will, because right. That's just the reality of humans. But as long as I know that my body can go, like I said earlier, my mind will catch up to it. So for right. me, that was a huge thing of just like, I need to be in shape to push myself. And as my dad gets older, because I'm not going to be able to walk in the woods with him, be able to push him as long as I can before he finally is not able to go anymore. So, and then you got all these mountain goats out here though, that are, you know, 5 foot seven, 5 foot eight, that are 160 pounds. And then if I ever Ryan, go hiking
he's,
or hunting,
he's not talking coca, about you, Ryan. You're only 5'2".
No, I'm 5'8", 5'9", but I'm in the.
When he wears his wife's high heels.
I'm in the 200s, so I'm definitely not the 150.
He's like Charles Barkley. He's the round mound of elk hunting.
Oh my God. Round mound of elk hunting. I know,
but
I get down the hill really fast. Okay,
bowling ball
style.
Roll.
But here's the thing, man. I mean, even you being, you know, at the 200-pound mark is still going to be 50 pounds lighter than me, you know? So I'm going to be naturally carrying that extra weight. So I need to have as much endurance as possible so I can keep up with guys that are at that size or that physical level. So that's my biggest thing when it comes to the fitness side. Now, as far as getting into the industry, that is still something that I am learning on a weekly, monthly basis, as far as brand deals, partnerships, just getting your content out there in front of people is really hard. Because what's interesting about our channel in particular is we do a lot of firearm content as well. It's scaled back a little bit just because of how the YouTubes are nowadays with their regulations. So we can't do all the videos that we want to with firearms. But the example I'm going to use is that, like, you have two industries, right? You have the firearms industry and you have the hunting industry. Mm-hmm. We found a lot of success with our firearm videos. I mean, still to date, we have a AR-15 video that's trending towards 1 million views, right? We have over 600,000 views on it, right? Wow. Right? So... but that's a niche market, right? But we've just gotten a little piece of that pie, which is, it's such a big niche market that even the little piece we're getting has been enough to, like, you know, get our names out there a little. So, but then you want to talk about the hunting industry and the outdoor industry. That's an even smaller niche market from, like, the firearm industry. So trying to get yourself out in there is even harder, because it is becoming more and more popular, and it is, you know, there is a lot of people who are doing the same thing, quote unquote. So you have to be different somehow, which can be hard when it comes to, you know, hunting, right? Like, how can you be different if you're an elk hunter? You know, I don't know. You got to just show other aspects of your preparation that goes into it, right? Like, how much time and attention goes into your prep or into your equipment and stuff like that. So I've still been navigating it. I've been lucky enough through the last 6 years or so, I've been able to meet some very cool people that we've been able to partner with, that have grown a lot themselves over the last 6 years. And we've been very fortunate and lucky to, you know, call them partners and, you know, friends of the show and the channel. So we appreciate all the support we've gotten so far, but every day I'm still trying to figure out a way how to get more people viewing our stuff, because it's stuff like this podcast that's going to bring in, I don't know how many people you guys have a month looking at your stuff, but for people, you know, I'm sure there's a large percentage of them that have never heard of Steep Country Outdoors. So stuff like this helps a ton. And we just got to keep moving forward.
Well, I think the good awesome. People out there need to keep supporting the good people out there. Right. I mean, in any industry, there's bad eggs and people with too big of egos and everything else. And, right. you know, you just have to find the people that are kind of like you that don't have those egos and aren't the bad eggs and just want to see all the good people grow. I mean, that's, Ryan will attest, that's our synthesis kind of with Cutright Mobile and everything. I mean, Ryan, Dustin, Jack, and Taylor, like, I'm fortunate as all get out to have sent a cold email to Taylor. When was that, Ryan? Like 3 or 4 years ago? Pitching the Cutright idea.
4 years, probably.
Yeah. And, you know, Taylor got the email and called me because he was going scouting in like a minute and a half, surprise living daylights out of me. I was sitting in my pajamas with my slippers on, drinking coffee on my back porch, and he called and I was like, oh my God, like I wasn't expecting this. And right. I mean, there's been ups and downs, but I mean, it's been, you find good people or good people find you, or like just good people tend to congregate together, and that's, good people need to support good people. So
right.
I think you're spot on with your partners, like they and your sponsors and stuff. They found you, you found them, and there's a reason all of those relationships come together.
Right, and a big part of that too, kind of like what Ryan was asking about how to get in that is authenticity is huge. So back to like the whole diet thing, being real with yourself. Like, am I an asshole? Maybe I'm an asshole. I should maybe try and figure this out, right? Yeah. Or, you know, or am I a pretty genuine, honest, hardworking person who, when I approach people, they're going to understand that through a conversation with me, you know? So right. A huge thing for me was like, just like the Salt Lake Show, the Western Hunt Expo. I mean, that was huge. Going down there in the beginning of 2019 and just realizing that I had no real skin in the game and just being super casual, going up to these companies or meeting people and just being my authentic self and just talk and having the conversation and then mentioning at the end, like, oh, hey, you know, me and my dad, we're doing this thing. We're not big by any means. And I mean, we're still not big by any means, but we're trying, you know, this is our mission. This is what we want to do through our content. Like, we'd love your support, like stuff like that. That leads and opens a door. It's that almost never shuts as long as you are true and authentic to yourself, right? Through those conversations, people are going to be able to sniff you out if you're being disingenuous or if you're in it for the wrong reasons. But I mean, if you approach people, and this is with anyone in life, right? Like business partners, coworkers, girlfriends, wives, anyone there, if you have honest conversations where you're give them your full attention and you state how you feel and you wear your emotions on your sleeve a little bit, like people are going to be able to see that over people who have ill intent.
Yeah. I agree. All right. So I got one for you. It's a onefold/twofold question.
Okay.
A week in the life of Richard Betancourt of Steep Country, a week of what your workout regime looks like, because that might be a little shorter of an answer. But then after you work out, whether it's in morning or evening or whatnot, what's the daily life like? Give us a 1 week rundown, a typical week, not a rest week, not a I'm gonna crush it, you know, I'm peaking week. Just like a general week in the life of you in terms of content, work, exercise, food, everything. What do you got going on week to week?
Right. So it's great because I've been doing this since like 2018 now, right? So I can kind of zoom out and look at the average of my weeks. And I do work a 9-to-5 job. It's 8-to-5, you know, and my coworkers would probably argue if I actually get there at 8, but that's neither here nor there. I do work a regular job. I'm a project engineer at a general contractor here in the state of Idaho. And so that takes up at least 45 to 50 hours of my week. So because of that, I have to fit in everything else around it. And those 45 to 50 hours, in order for me to be successful at my job, require me to be very locked in and to be very efficient with what I'm doing and working hard. So, but obviously like I said earlier, I don't want to be defined by that, right? Like I'm not just Richard, the project engineer. I want to be Richard the archery elk hunter, or Richard the, you know, steep country Richard, you know? So because I work those hours, I do have to set myself a regimen where I have very early mornings. Well, I won't say very early because I know people out there get up at 3:30 in the morning, but I'm getting up on average about 5 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I set my alarm for 4:50 and I'm usually out of bed by 5 o'clock or 5:10 every day. And that's my gym time. So usually you got to wake up, get prepared for a workout, and hit the gym. And usually I'm in the gym from 5:30 or 6 until, you know, 7:15, 7:20. So I'm working out for an hour to an hour and a half on average every single, well, not every single day. I would say 5 days a week. Usually I would give myself, you know, 2 days of rest on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays. But I am following a pretty strict routine as far as you got to work out Monday to Friday. You got to get it in. I won't allow myself to work out in the evenings really because just the gym situations here in the Valley in the evenings, it's just a total nightmare. So I just don't want to deal with that. And I really appreciate the people that go in the mornings at the gym. There's some pretty legit people in there who grind it out, and it's motivating to see them in there day after day. But so I hit the gym, and then after the gym, I have to go to work for, you know, the 9 hours or whatever it is that I'm working. And after that, I come home, and then it's like, okay, until that 9 or 10 o'clock when I got to get into bed, that's kind of my, it sucks because that's my leftover energy for the day, whatever I have to work on, like steep country, for instance, right? And it's really hard because not every day is perfect. And I can be honest saying that, like, there are really tough days where whatever happened in the office is carrying over into when I got home. And it's just, I'll sit in front of my laptop or on my phone to create something, and it's just not there. And it's just like, okay, I just got to zone out, you know? So anyway, my time where I create is essentially in the evenings. And the biggest challenge for me is the planning of it all, because I've found that I'm most efficient when it comes to creating, when I've built a legitimate plan out for myself, when I have the energy, right? So on the weekends or something, I can sit down, write out plans or write out video ideas or go record videos or anything like that, and then write out a legitimate plan. Okay, how are we going to work through this to make it what we want it? And how am I going to post this and share this on our platforms to where people are actually going to want to click on it? They're going to want to consume it. They're going to want to, you know, enjoy it. So it's really big balance for me. And it's a tough balance, but it's like we were saying earlier, you have to want it. And like I was saying earlier, it's been very cool for me to see that even as I'm progressing in my professional career as, you know, corporate Richard, I'm still able to progress in my personal career of steep country Richard, right? And to see steep country continue to grow and progress. So I do have a lot of days where I daydream about the brand. And if I were able to focus those 45 to 50 hours on the brand itself and, you know, my content itself and where I could go and what I could do. And, you know, I have some really good people in my life that like to tell me, as I tell them that stuff, they say, you know, Richard, that's great. And if you keep that in your head and you truly feel that way, it's going to happen for you, you know, and it will happen one day to where you're able to spend that time. But right now, this is just the season you're in, and, you know, you're doing a good job continuing to work through it. So as far as like my diet and everything, it's, I try and live by the 90-10 rule. Sometimes I might swing 80-20, maybe even 75-35. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I try and live by that 90-10 and eat as clean as possible most days, and not succumb to those sweet nothings of those little tasty morsels of, you know, the Twinkies or the chips or and stuff. But I will allow myself to enjoy that stuff here and then. I mean, I will say that over the last probably 2 or 3 years, I've put on some permanent LBs from where I was, and I'm trying like hell to get them off. And I've this year so far, 2020, end of 2023 and beginning of 2024, I've been kind of going through another mind shift of just focus and discipline and realizing, mm-hmm. okay, obviously your average week is making you trend in a certain way. So it's time to change some things and tighten the belt a little bit so you can tighten the belt in real life and get some new goals and start working towards them.
It sounds like there's a common theme in the past, like hour we've been talking, like from football to realizing where you're at with weight and training and diet to, you know, the brand with your dad and hunting to your daily week and stuff. You have a lot of self-discipline, and you also have the ability that a lot of people don't have, which is a little bit of introspection and holding yourself responsible. And I picked it up when you said, like, I work best when I do this. A lot of people don't figure that out. A lot of people don't figure out, like, hey, I work best on my side hustle or my diet or my time at the gym when I have a freaking plan. Like, a lot of people be like, oh, I work best at 4 a.m. What do you do at 4 a.m. that you don't do at 5 p.m.? Something's different. And maybe it truly is just energy and that's your creative time to write or whatever. But you realizing, like, hey, I'm not doing steep country at 5 a.m. That's my gym time because that's when I have energy. I don't want to do it afterwards. So I need to figure out how to do it from 5 to 9 at night. But if I don't have a plan written down on sticky notes everywhere or in my head on my phone somewhere, I'm going to sit at the computer. I'm going to consume a lot of people's other content and get some ideas for stuff that I might do in the future. But am I really going to progress steep country that much if I don't have a good plan? And I applaud you for that, because that's not a talent. That's something that comes with self-discipline and learning oneself. And that's pretty freaking awesome to be able to do that.
What? Well, and I think it's tough to be a Division I athlete without that, you know, like
oh, yeah.
with the competition, the things you're going against. And so it just, you know, it just set you up for success after football, you know, and that's kind of the theme that I got was you talked about cutting corners with diets and stuff earlier on the show, you know, and I think that's where most people fall short is they're doing 85%, but those few corners that they're cutting is leaving, you know, that's what's making them so they're not seeing the results they want. And as you've talked about, you know, steep country, your diet and your work life and your workout, you're not cutting those corners, you know, and mm-hmm. even with you starting this new diet, you're figuring it out. So you don't cut those corners, you know. When you went hunting with your dad that first time and there was elk you didn't chase because you felt like you're out of shape, you decided not to go there. That's cutting a corner. And that's the difference between success and not having success, you know?
Right. And, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, right? And yeah. I've found myself feeling like I'm going insane sometimes because I'll be putting in so much effort 85% of the way, right?
Yeah.
But then that last, you know, 15% is, you know, I'm giving myself a break. I'm taking the path of least resistance like water does, you know. I'm doing mm-hmm. all these things that are then impacting that other 85% from progressing. So, and it's been through like I do not want to claim like I got it figured out or like I'm, you know, I'm this super disciplined guy, blah, blah, blah. Like I am just as imperfect as the next person. Right. And I have my flaws. However, through my failures over the last, you know, from 2018 to this point, this has just been a culmination of where I failed and where I've learned. And, you know, one of the biggest things and why it's really cemented to me, like, the steep country is a passion and the outdoors is a passion and fitness is a passion is because of the amount of times I've failed in them. You know, I'm kind of one of those people that believes like someone who goes out and does something and finds immediate success, like there's no way they're going to ever truly be able to say that they're passionate about that. They may have gotten lucky and then have just ridden that luck for as much as it's worth, whether it's, you know, who knows how long. But for like the people that I like to be around and the people that I respect the most are the people that fail, fall flat on their face, right? And then can pick themselves up, say, okay, here were my shortcomings. I'm being honest with myself. Here's where I can be better. Here's how I'm going to be better, and then develop that plan and then execute it. And then, you know, whether it's just they were a little bit better than they were before they failed, or they have huge jump of success, like it doesn't matter. They're moving the needle forward and they're progressing in the right direction. So, I mean, realistically, it's like one of those things. This is what I want people to understand about me and my brand and my content is, yeah, okay, we post videos of when we are successful on an elk hunt or a deer hunt or whatever, but it didn't come without hard work and it didn't come without, you know, grinding. And even the deer film that we posted today, it wasn't even my hunt, but you know, it was from my friend, and that unit was supposed to be a like one and done, kill the biggest buck of your life unit. But we went out there, I mean, and yes, it was a day. So in retrospect, like it wasn't like this crazy grind, but we went out in that day and it was not this promised land of all these big bucks, you know, like we found the one buck that was seemed to be out there that day. And, you know, there's a whole backstory about it being his first buck and everything, but we determined it was a buck that he was more than happy with and excited about. And so we worked for it that day and we were able to take it home. So it was, mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. And, awesome. Yeah.
So Ryan, I have a couple more unless you got them.
Nope. Go shoot.
Okay. Top three exercises to get people in shape for the mountains.
Ooh, man.
You only get three. Top three.
Are we talking like just weight or are we talking any sort of movement?
It could be weight, whatever you want. Whatever you want, brother. You only got three though. Top three.
Oh man. So you got to have strong legs to be in the mountains and especially these Idaho mountains. And, you know, we're named steep country for a reason. It's not just because it sounds cool. It's because Idaho has some steep country. No matter where you're at, you got to have good, strong legs. Because even after you kill something, you got to get it out of there. So got to be able to pack that. So I would say cardio because I know you thought I was going to say squats.
I was hoping you were going to say squats because I was going to challenge you on that one.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
I thought you were going to say thrusters. So
say what?
He was going to say what?
Hip thrusters.
Oh, that's for the Instagram.
I was going to say, all right, so we got cardio.
So yeah, cardio, just because, I mean, you're working your legs and keeping your legs strong through your cardio.
Okay.
That's tough, but man, and I've been able to get away so long without focusing strictly on my legs. So I'm going to say some sort of shoulder movement, right? So any sort of shoulder exercise is okay. Good just because of the wear and tear that goes on your upper body and shoulders as you know.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, it's kind of an obvious one, but I would say just back squats in general are probably pretty good, but it doesn't even have to be back squats just because I know that there's folks out there and myself included that have back issues that, you know, loading your back down like that isn't the greatest. So figuring out a way to replicate a back squat and putting your, because that's what they say about squatting, at least, is it's like one of the best full body exercises, mm-hmm. just because mm-hmm. it involves so many different muscles. So figuring out any way to replicate like some sort of squat movement where you're engaging, you know, all the parts of your legs, some part of your upper body, you know, your traps, your neck, whatever.
I'm a big fan of those rear leg elevated split squats where you're holding a dumbbell in each hand. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like you put the bench 2 feet behind you, put your right foot up on that left leg out front, and you go down to that knees at 90. And I like those because it gets the stabilizing muscles in your hips and stuff. And you do, you know, five sets of eight with each leg of those. You're not doing them in rapid succession. You're setting those weights down after each leg and wishing that you didn't just do it. And then you pick the damn things up and do the other leg. And then you take 2 minutes off and listen to angry white kid music or whatever you're listening to in your headphones to get ready for that next set. I love those to take the place of squats, because back squats, they kill me too. Like they, yeah. I just feel that spinal compression come down.
Right. Yeah. And I broke my back in college, actually. So I do battle with some back issues, but I will say, because of how my training is nowadays versus how it was in college, I've actually had less issues with my back, just because I'm more about the functional fitness versus the power, right? Like I'm all about keeping my body limber and strong and lean as much as I can versus, you know, mass and power. But yeah, for legs, I actually like those. I call them goblet squats, but basically, you know,
are awesome. Holding it in front. Right. And, love those. Okay, second one.
Here we go.
Oh, I got more questions for you, bro. All right.
I love it.
Zone 2 or zone 4 fitness? Zone 2 being a brisk walk to build up that low level cardio. So, like when I think about fitness, I think of it as like a bell shaped curve, right? And with zone 4 being at the top and zone 2 being at the bottom. And if you pull zone 4 up, you're going to make that curve narrower. Like you may not necessarily have that long, steady distance, but you'll be strong, powerful. If you do zone 2, you stretch that out a lot and you're going to lose a lot of that 4. Where do you think most of your training falls into, zone 2 or zone 4 training? In zone 2, like I said, brisk walk where you can talk to the person that you're with, nonstop sentences. Zone 4, when somebody comes in and is like, how you doing, Richard? And you're like, can't get fucking out of here. And that's about all you can get out.
I do think that there is importance in both. So I will start by saying that as a way to just cover all my bases. However, I have learned so much about endurance training over the last couple years to where now I would say, your zone 2, zone 1 even, are huge, because I learned, you know, our heart is a muscle, right? And our muscles are only designed and able to work over an extended period of time for so long. So if you're just constantly beating the hell out of it in that zone 4 red line peak fitness, your heart isn't building any true endurance because it's just beating, because it's just trying to keep you upright and alive, right? Whereas when you spend some intentional time in zone 1 and zone 2, and that's the thing about those, is I said intentional because generally those sessions are going to be a lot longer than your zone 3 and zone 4 sessions. If you just want to go burn some calories because you just need to go lift some weights or go run a mile because you're just all pent up, that zone 3, zone 4, you're just going to burn some calories. Mm-hmm. However, that zone 1, zone 2, if you spend some intentional time doing those long, slow runs where you're, you know, or you're that those weight training sessions where you're not crazy with the weight, but your sets and your reps are super high, like that's where you're going to see a ton of progress as far as how long you can endure these physical challenges on the mountain. I mean, I've learned, so, you know, my girlfriend, she is into endurance running and like ultra marathoning and stuff like that. So shout out to her really quick, I guess. But that has been, there's just been such a parallel for me in her training and my training, because I'm not, like I said earlier, I'm not looking to just hunt elk for, you know, 2 or 3 days. I hunt elk for damn near 30 days. Right. We were in the elk woods for 21 days this last year. I got to make sure that on day 21, if that's the day I shoot an elk, no matter where I'm at, I can pack it out, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's where that, that endurance in not only my muscles all over my body, but the endurance in my heart muscles really are important for me. So I choose the zone 2, zone 1 training because I know I'm all about the long game. However, I do appreciate and understand the importance of having zone 3 and zone 4 for peaking out.
I got two more. Ryan, unless you want to jump in, I got two more questions.
Nope, keep going. I'm enjoying the content.
Here's one that I won't specifically say the name of training, but they typically show up in like warehouse gyms and have a squat rack and pull-up bar and kettlebells and rowers and stuff in it. And they're $150 a month and you have a coach yelling at you and stuff like that to do more. And 30 people show up and there's a clock on, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Fitness factory or injury factory?
Or the wet factory, sorry.
Fitness factory or injury factory?
Ooh. Yeah, I'm all about the fitness factory.
Right. Would that thing I was just talking about, would you consider that place and that type of workout a fitness factory or a factory where to set you up for injuries?
So here's what I'll say. All right. And no matter what style of training people feel like they need to do in order to accomplish whatever goals it is they have, that is totally subject to them, right? I know we all have our personal opinions about these different types of factories, whether, you know, you're doing a bodybuilding split or you're doing a, I'll say the word, CrossFit split, you know?
I didn't say it.
So to me, there's, you know, whatever works for you and whatever's going to get you out there, get you moving, get you working towards your goals, you need to absolutely stick with that and choose that. Now, for me, and even before I speak for myself, whatever factory you choose, you need to, again, drop your ego about it and be a student of the game and realize when you walk into that, bodybuilding gym, that you're not going to go be the guy, even though you might look like you should throw up 300 pounds on a bench, you probably can't. So you don't need to go try and puff your chest out to anybody. If you can only bench 90 pounds or 135 pounds, then that's what you should bench. And that's what you need to just, that's your baseline. And that's where you need to start. And then once you realize that and are working with that, then we can go from there. Same with the CrossFit industry, right? You go into these CrossFit gyms and it's loud music, super high energy, people doing all these acrobatics on the bars. And you're just like, what the hell am I doing? You know, I didn't know I was walking into a circus. Like, yeah. I'm never going to be able to stand on my head or pull myself up on a bar and leap, you know, all these things. So as long as you're real with yourself and like, okay, I can't do that right now, so I'm going to go learn how to do it and not expect myself to be able to do it until I've learned it and built up to it, then that's great, you know. So I would say, whatever poison you're choosing, just have an open mind and really learn about it and give it a try and then go from there. Now, for me personally, I've never been into CrossFit. Now, I've never really tried a ton of CrossFit. I have done circuit workouts through my collegiate training. And then even since I've been out of college, I've done some circuit style workouts. Now, one thing I'll say about the CrossFit workouts, there is a lot of functional fitness happening in them. But the one thing that I don't like about it or that could cause an injury factory for me personally, too, dealing with previous injuries, like, is just the intensity and how fast things have to happen. Right. Mm-hmm. So for a lot of the training I do a lot of like bodybuilding, like isolated muscle group training. But there are a lot of CrossFit movements that I will incorporate into my training, but at a way slower down pace, right? You know, like I think, you know, box jumps and step ups and, you know, the kettlebell stuff, like that's all great stuff. You know, I just, the intensity and the speed that they do it for me could cause me to like sacrifice form because I'm naturally able to move more weight. So that gives me a higher risk automatically of if I sacrifice my form, injuring myself.
Nice. Agreed.
Well, and that's why I think it's important that, you know, fitness is individual. You know, it's we're competing against ourselves. And, you know, I think that's why CrossFit gets a bad rep, because you're racing against everybody. And so people are compromising form. But as long as you remember that you know, it's individual. You're not going to compromise form, but you're going to go as fast as you can while keeping good form. I mean, in all aspects of fitness, I mean, as long as it's personal against yourself, I think you can be safe and effective in doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I said, you know, people can choose their poison, whatever it is that motivates them and gets them out. That's the biggest thing, right? Is getting out there, moving, and doing something rather than nothing. And it's funny that you talk about this, because my saying for the week has actually been, done is better than perfect. Mm. And you know what I mean by that has, there's been a lot going on just this last month for me, between my office job and, you know, with Steep Country stuff, and I have a lot of plans and all these things, and spending time with family, friends, whatever. And mm-hmm. I'm also in a half marathon prep right now as well. So to me, it's just been, you know what? It may not be perfect. My lift may not be perfect. My run may not be as fast as it needs to be, but, you know, done is better than perfect. And at the end of the day, if I can go home and go to bed and say, okay, I got my workout done, I gave it all at work today, I got an hour in of Steep Country stuff, then you know what? I can rest easy.
All right, I got one more. This is my last one. This is the last one. You have a pint of your favorite beer or a glass of your favorite whiskey sitting in front of you. Which one are you going to drink? And both is not an answer option.
I'm a whiskey guy, so I'm taking the whiskey all day.
Bingo. All right, I knew I liked you even more.
Yeah. I actually have a, you can't really see it, but I got some nice whiskeys sitting behind me here that I've had for years. I just don't really drink a lot, so I've just had them, and they just look pretty, you know.
They're cool looking bottles. That's what I got.
That is a great way to end a fitness episode. You know that?
Hey, Richard, dude, I am super grateful that you came on for a bit. And I know we didn't get to talk about wild game recipes and animals in the woods once we knock them down. So I think I can speak for both Ryan and I. We'd love to have you on again as hunting season draws a little closer, and talk about some of that stuff, maybe even in the summertime, as people are like, okay, I need to clear my freezer out a little bit and make some good recipes, because I know you got some good ones going on too.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. I appreciate you having me on a ton. And yeah, this was a great podcast episode to start with, I'd say. If we need to do a part two, I'm more than open, because yeah, the fitness thing and the whole journey and background story of Steep Country is one thing on its own. But the behind the scenes, like the, you know, the nutrition and the why of why I'm out there elk hunting, bear hunting, deer hunting, all these things, like, yeah, jumping into the nutritional side and the recipe side, I'd absolutely love to do that with you guys. I have some pretty crazy recipes too that, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen, but
Are they on your Instagram page?
Well, I'll just give the listeners an example. There is a video on the Steep Country page about eating coyote. So, just saying.
Oh,
no. Just saying. You know, Mike, you're shaking your head, Mike, but I think if you watch that video, you might be surprised at the, if you use one of the recipes, you might be surprised at how it tastes. Just saying.
I mean, Surik tastes like pumpkin pie, but I'm not eating the filthy motherfucker. Quoting Pulp Fiction there. So, hey, Richard, why don't you plug where the listeners can find you and get in touch with you if that's an option or whatnot?
Yeah, sounds good. So I have my personal Instagram, which is steepcountry_Richard. And country, again, is spelled KUNTRY. And that's my personal Instagram. So you'll see more. You'll see the outdoor life, but then you see more of the fitness life on there. And then Steep Country Outdoors, we are on all the socials as well. So we have the Instagram at Steep Country Outdoors. If you YouTube search us, Steep Country Outdoors, we should be the first one that pops up. And yeah, we're on Facebook too, Steep Country Outdoors. So go ahead and like and subscribe is what I always tell people. You know, follow my personal page. If anyone's listening and they want me to expand on anything that we talked about tonight, whether it's the, you know, the coyote recipe I just talked about, or, you know, anything fitness related or archery elk hunting or, you know, equipment, anything like that, like, feel free to reach out, shoot me a message on any of the platforms, and I'll get to it. And I'd love to answer people's questions.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Richard. Perfect. Appreciate it.